apartment. Our support staff, good morning. Good morning to everyone. We need to start with our meeting. Today we are looking at the second Kotalo report. That is from the 1st of April to June, and from July up until September. Yeah. Where we are going to look at and hear the department, how are they doing on their service delivery performance? Are they working towards the targets as we did approve their APP as the committee, just to have that check as to say, is it going well, so that we are not surprised at the end of the year when we receive our annual report. If ever there are deviations, let's go together and see what is happening. So that is the presentation that we'll be getting today. But honorable members, before we get into the presentation that will be led by UDG, I would really plead with you that we afford UDG an opportunity to brief the portfolio committee on the next paper two leakages that we have heard about, that we have read about in the media. We've heard the minister talking about it, but as a portfolio committee, just for a few minutes, DG, if you can take us through as to say what happened, how far, how huge the damage is. I know we've read that there are investigations that are still taking place, but just take us on board as a committee so that we understand well and we are clear on what has really happened, though. As I'm saying, reading from the newspaper and what we are getting, I know that maybe as the investigations are still going on, maybe we won't get into the bottom of it, but we will afford you that opportunity to do that before we engage on on the presentations for today. But before I give it to you, Mr. Brown, are there any apologies for the sitting today?
Thank you, Chair. I've received an apology from Honourable Koza, Honourable Simo, and Honourable Basot for today's meeting. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Allow me again, Honourable Members, not to get into introductions. There are no new faces. We know each other by now. DG?
So, Chair, I just want to tender the apology of Mr. Kujana, who's ill-disposed and represented by Mr. Mafoko. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Then, can we allow you then, DG, before you get into the presentation, to brief us on that paper leakage?
Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members and colleagues, Chair, the National Senior Certificate Examination started on the 19th of October with the writing of papers of information technology, which is a practical paper, and computer application and technology, which is also a practical paper. The major exams really started on the 24th of October, with all learners writing English in particular. On the 30th of October, when learners were writing Maths Paper 2, we received information of the leak, which surfaced in Giani High School in Limpopo. And I'm saying it surfaced in Giani High School in Limpopo. And what happened is that one learner who was involved in the leak paper, which was shared with about 25 other learners in the same school, was taken out to the restroom by the invigilator, and on her way to the restroom, she then confessed out of her own volition. I want to emphasize the poem confessed and saying, out of own volition, that there is no use, she doesn't see any use of continuing to write the paper because they will have to rewrite, because the questions that she has seen are similar to questions of the paper that they discussed in preparing for exams. After the learners wrote, there was a lot of pandemonium in the school, a lot of excitement and so on, and the principal went on to interview a number of learners, and indeed it came out that learners confirmed what the other learner had indicated, and the information was then relayed to the department. Mr. Mpanza, who's here as the acting branch head, was part of the team that quickly went over on the 31st to go and do the investigation. Learners in Giani High School who are doing maths are 124. And this leak also affected two other schools in the area, one public school, the other one an independent school. During the course of the investigation of Mr. Mpanza, Dr. Polia and the team, it came out that the leaked paper came from a source in which was based in Gauteng, but originally from the Giani area in Limpopo, who happens to be a learner registered with the University of Johannesburg, UJ. You can say a student who was attached to the Giani High School, but now studying with the the University of Johannesburg. The police were immediately informed. The Hawks are dealing with the matter. They've indicated to us that it is still early in the investigation. The deadline that we've given them is the 15th of this month, because by then we need to know the scale of the paper that has been leaked, so that we also determine and start getting into the logistics of making arrangements for the number of learners who will have to rewrite and institute the necessary processes of disciplinary hearings, etc., and etc. The Hawks have confiscated the cell phones of all these learners who are involved, because the learner from the UJ sent the learner who confessed a WhatsApp with the paper. And then this learner also shared the WhatsApp with some of the learners. So those learners who are affected, their cell phones have been confiscated so that they could be used by the Hawks as part of the investigation. Chair, we will in future update you on further developments on these matters. The Hawks have also interviewed three other learners in Gauteng, including the student who is the source of this leak. That is it for now regarding this matter, and we'll update you accordingly in due course. Our young people have written 104 papers out of 202. Which goes well over 50%, but we're almost 50% way towards finishing writing the National Senior Certificate exams. That is the update, Chair, on this matter. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, DG, for the update. Unfortunately, that is why I said we can't get to the bottom of the end of this update up until we wait for the due date that you have given to the Hawks, of which it will be next week in Bill's the meetings to come, we'll be having the full report and the full investigation report as to say what happened, and hopefully we'll be getting into the bottom of this as to say how was the paper leaked. I can see there are comrades who are itching to say something on this report. I will allow that. I nearly said Comrade Davis, but it was not going to be a change match anyway. Honorable Davis, Honorable Boshoff, was there another handle? Those two hands, yes.
Thank you, DG, for that. It's very useful to know what's happening in this league. I'd just like to know, do we know how the student from UJ, how did they get the paper? Did they get it from somebody in the department? And how do we know that there's not other students or other people who also got the paper that were distributing it? And how do we know that other papers haven't been leaked? So, in other words, could the problem be a bit more widespread than we think? Or can we rule that out? Thank you.
Thank you. I'm covered by Honourable Davis. I would just like to know, this student that did leak the paper, that was an ex-student of Giani, how do we know that she and some of her followers last year or the year before, whenever she wrote matric, did not also write any leaked papers? So she's sitting at varsity, maybe not with the correct percentages. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the questions. I will allow you, DG, though you have responded to all these questions, but do respond, because I think they form part of the investigations that we're talking about, but I will allow you a minute to respond to them.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe I should have mentioned, because I was called, I gave the report almost off the cuff. If I had been warned before, I would have prepared as a comprehensive report. And the statement that we released to the public. In addition to the Hawks, the minister felt that it would be necessary to appoint a special investigation unit, given the fact that a paper, a life sciences paper, was leaked in Vembe district last year. Up to now, we haven't found the real source of that leak. And the minister felt that, although the matter is also investigated by the Hawks, by the way, it was immediately reported with the Hawks, and the minister felt that we cannot only rely on law enforcement agencies of the country, we must also go for special investigation unit. The experience that we have is that private investigation services seem to be moving much faster. I don't know why, but that seems to be the experience. So we are employing services of a private investigation team. Mr. Schumann has started that exercise as well. So it's both Hawks and the private investigation team that's going to look at this matter. And we've also indicated that we'd like them to review our security arrangements in the department in relation to exams, so that we determine as to whether there's any lacks in our security, or whether probably our security standards are not up to date. We need somebody outside the department to do that. How do we know whether this learner has not written leaked papers the previous year or so? Well, indeed we don't know, but the fact that the cell phone has been confiscated, and I pray very hard that it should be a cell phone that probably the student has been using for at least a year or two or a number of years. If that is the case, then the gleaning of the information from the cell phone, if the information was shared through the cell phone of probably the papers that were written last year, that will give us more information on that. We have mechanisms of dealing with that. Even if you would have written and received a certificate, it's simply withdrawn and you're subjected to the necessary procedures. Other papers, well, when we released the press statement, one journalist said to us he had reliable information that Economics paper 2 has been leaked. And we then encouraged the journalist to make that information available to us. We are still waiting for that information. That was on Friday last week. The journalist has not been able to give us that information. what I can say is that from what is available to us, it's only paper 2, maths, that has leaked. But as I said, the cell phones are being have been confiscated of the learners involved, and the information gleaned from these gadgets will give us, will shed more light in terms of the number of papers that leaked and the number of learners who became beneficiaries of this leak. Do we know how the student from UJ got the leaked paper? Is there a departmental official or officials who were involved? At this stage, Honorable Davis, we don't know. We are still at pain to find out, as I said earlier on, as to who leaked last year's paper. But we do know that the paper would have leaked from the storage point in Vembe. That we know. But that is still being investigated by the Hawks. And we might want to even subject that to private investigation so that we get quicker to the source of these leaks, and then we find ways of nipping them in the bud. Chair, that's our best. I've tried to apply my mind off the cuff to these questions. But as I committed, I'm available to come and present a comprehensive report to you on this.
Okay, thank you very much.
Honorable members, it was just a briefing on this so that we don't hear it from the newspapers. We know exactly what happened. Then let's go straight to what we are here for today. Honorable Ngun.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Morning, Mr. Chairman. I want to throw something through the window. See, I've been going through an article yesterday, so I can. I will request that if the department can look at the issue, there's a school there, because we're in the period where exams are being written, that they have been denied writing examinations and they have not been given the resources. If the department can just intervene to check, that school is called is Warney Primary in Rockville, Gauteng. There are some issues of measure and the like. If we can, we can make a follow up. As we are in the exam time, and we cannot leave that unattended. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Is that primary?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you very much for that. DG, you have your 35 minutes for your presentation. On the second quarterly report, you see how you spread your time amongst yourself. Can I hand over to you?
Chairperson, thank you very much. As we would usually do, I will go through the presentation, but areas where we have achieved in terms of the targets, I will assume that members are happy with those areas, and then focus mainly on areas of underperformance to give explanation, and then move to finish the report. It is indeed a second quarterly report. Chairperson, is divided into two parts. The first part is about indicators and targets. The second part is the financial report. I'll leave the purpose in the interest of time, but essentially the purpose is to report on performance against the annual performance plan, indicator predetermined objectives and indicators in the annual performance plan. These are the five programs that we're carrying out our work through. Activities and resourcing are organized. This is the summary of the performance in terms of the status bar for indicators. As I indicated, Chair, it's the second quarterly report, and you've also, in your opening remark, covered that. The first program is administration. And in this program, we're focusing mainly on providing administrative support to other functions of the department. This program has achieved the first two performance indicators, and of course, has partially achieved the third one. The program, as I said, it's about the provision of human resources and the management and development of such resources. It's about filling of vacancies. It's about also human resource development. It's also about managing human resources through performance management, through conduct management, as indicated in there. We've also been able to report or to account to various structures on outcome 1, outcome 7, outcome 13, and outcome 14. We've also tabled the annual report to Parliament as indicated there. We've also been strengthening our communication through those various avenues, as also covered there. Internal audit remains a very important area of the department. We are focusing on strengthening our internal audit, and I think our fourth quarterly report, as well as our annual report, would have reflected some weaknesses within our internal control environment. So we are restructuring the internal audit. We are paying attention to that. We also submitted final annual performance evaluation report on conditional grants to National Treasury. We've also participated in meetings that involve international fora such as UNESCO, as indicated there. The meeting about Sustainable Development Goal number 4, and the acronym there, Chair, ROSA, stands for Regional Office for Southern Africa. Regional Office for Southern Africa, and IAJ seminar stands for Institute for Advancement of Journalism. I'm sorry that we've put in as acronyms without giving the full name of the acronym. And we've also been involved in activities that are about MOUs, Memorandum of Understanding, as well as Memorandum of Agreement with the countries that are indicated below. Program 2, it's really about curriculum and assessment, policy monitoring and support. The first target is an annual target. The second one we partially achieved. And I must indicate particularly on this program, and the others that are going to follow, the underperformance or partial achievement of targets, it's mainly due to some of the financial resources that we depend on monitoring these activities, such as your European Union grant that we use to monitor some of these activities. So the partial achievement could be due to that, and I must indicate that we had a delay in finalizing the business plan with Treasury, where Treasury was of the view that certain aspect of the business plan had to be changed, and it started last year. It's almost done. We almost concluded the business plan now, with surgery, and that caused major delays. I had to even request for a meeting with the DG of Treasury to raise the issue and write more than 3 letters to try and get them to release these funds. But I must also add, Chair, that getting the core business of the organization depending largely on donor funding is a huge risk for the sector. And I'm raising it with you because you approve budgets, you engage with various structures of parliament that deal with appropriation and so on. And I'm saying it's a risk. If the core business has to rely on donor funding, it's a huge risk. It shouldn't really happen. Well, apart from 2.2.2, the rest are annual targets. And again, the monitoring of OnePlus, on this one, it's about the delivery of workbooks. And I must say that during quarter one and quarter two, we managed only to go up to about 56.5. But I can confirm that volume one, workbooks for grade R, grade 1 to 9, have been delivered to all schools. The proof of delivery, PODs, stand at 97% for volume one. Volume two is being delivered, and the intention is that by the end of November, volume two should have been delivered as well. I am very confident that during your oversight visit to the Eastern Cape, you should come across these workbooks that are delivered to schools. I'm saying it with confidence. And it's workbooks, not textbooks. I'm talking about workbooks, not textbooks. Because we are responsible for workbooks. Chairperson, the next one is about annual targets. You'll allow me then to just pass because there's nothing there. 2.4.3, it's of course about the number of districts visited for monitoring OnePlus4 strategy, and this underperformance relates to the explanation that I've given earlier on, where money from the EU had to be used for monitoring. And it highlights the same challenge that I've raised earlier on. We've even gone to the extent of requesting the team to steal from Peter to pay Paul in order to make sure that we don't underperform in the majority of these targets. In other words, to take money that is allocated for activities elsewhere for either quarter four or, you know, a month within quarter four later in the year to use it for this activity. And once we get the EU money, then reconcile our records so that the activity doesn't lag behind. The same applies to those that are partially achieved, the two that are partially achieved as well. And the next ones are annual targets, Chair. Well, curriculum, of course, it's about early childhood development. The major issue there has been about implementing a uniform curriculum for birth to four, which we've introduced in the last 2 years. We're now moving to covering all ECD centers, including community-based centers. In our annual report and the first quarterly report for 2016-2017, we've reported on the number of copies that have been printed and circulated to schools, the number of practitioners who have been trained on this national curriculum framework. That is the major issue there, and otherwise what is also populated in that slide is about training that has taken place to the practitioners, and it's also about the work that we are doing for the three-stream model in respect of the third stream, the technical occupational stream, finalizing the curriculum of the third stream because we'll be starting to pilot Chairperson in 2017. And we've also been carrying out consultation meetings in the provinces as indicated there regarding strengthening the policy on rural education. We've also been involved inactivities with other departments. The good thing about rural education, you work with land and rural development, you work with the Department of Science and Technology, you're getting a number of departments that are able to support schools in the rural areas so that we contribute to the development of communities that are located in these geographic locations. In terms of LTSM, I've already covered the issue of the workbooks, that in terms of quota two, this was the work that was done, but in terms of where we are now, I want to repeat, all workbooks for volume one have been delivered to schools. The PODs stand at 97%. Math, science and technology, these are the schools that were supplied with the resources, teachers who were trained during the second quarter, and we just provided a picture of some of the deliveries that I've referred to. There are also activities of JICA, Department of Basic Education, and the Japanese agency that is involved in the development or rather the training of the math teachers with a view of improving performance in the foundation phase, intermediate phase, and later on in the senior phase. In terms of ICT, we've had schools that 278 schools that benefited from the universal service and access obligation, where service providers are expected to make this contribution, Chairperson, towards connecting schools. I've reported last time that we've moved our level of connectivity from 48% in October 2015, and by the end of the first quarter in 2016 were at 51%. Other surveys have even confirmed that, such as the World Economic Forum, that our improvement with two places is accounted for by our level of connectivity. And these are the service providers that I've referred to earlier on. We've also been increasing the development of digital materials and making them available to schools. Karikude, the main focus in the last few months has been to prepare for Karikude. Karikude only started from end of October, beginning of November, and it's going to end in March. As I indicated before, you don't necessarily run this program in line with the academic year. There's a specific time allocation provided to it, and we are able to carry it out within the specified period. And part of the activity that was carried out was the verification of the learner assessment portfolios, the LAPs, of the outgone cycle, so that we are able to determine the competency of these learners who have gone through the last cycle of Karikude. And as I indicated, the new classes started on the 1st of November. The Second Chance program, we've been focusing on using the teacher centers that are there, using telematics, also the broadcast solution to reach out to learners, to provide support to learners. And then we are also preparing for the next lot of learners who would be writing supplementary exams in 2017. We've also been involved, Chair, in monitoring winter schools, and that is the information. These are the learners who we visited throughout the province. Dr. Maboya's team has also been carrying out oversight visits to provinces, to all the nine provinces. All nine provinces have been covered, and I'm sure she'll be more than comfortable to take almost any question with respect to the oversight visits that have been carried out. Program three is about the provision of teachers' development human resource planning and institutional development. And the indicators there are annual, the first two, and the third one has been met. The first two indicators again are annual, and the other indicator has been partially met. And again, these activities are predicated on donor funding, which I've indicated already, that it's something that in the long term we need to address, because it's a huge risk to get the core business of the organization relying on donor funding. The program chair dealt with teacher and professional development, and these are the provinces that benefited from training, KZN, Eastern Cape, Limpopo, in terms of the post-provisioning model. And I must just use this moment to explain part of the problem with challenges emanating from implementing the post-provisioning model. Chair, you've been to the Eastern Cape, and I'm sure every area that you went to, you would have come across a complaint about the Peter Mokel model. There's nothing wrong about the Peter Mokel model. The program uses the computer software. The problem has been with the understanding of the policy on how to implement the program. And I've now been reliably informed that after this training has been carried out, including in the Eastern Cape, officials for the first time are saying, we're now acknowledging that we've been implementing this program wrongly. And by the way, we've got a report of the assessment which was done by Deloitte and Touche, which covered all the nine provinces. And that report indicates that all the nine provinces have not been implementing the post-provisioning norm correctly. And we've shared that report with HODs, with MECs, and it's for that reason that these provinces have now requested for training in implementing norms for post-provisioning. And of course, part of what we are covering there is just to indicate what has been set aside for this financial year for Funza Lushaka, and the number of teachers which are to be covered for the money that is provided. And I must also indicate that we are strengthening our support for Funza Lushaka bazaars. Apart from challenges that are experienced with NEFSAS, there are challenges with Funza Lushaka as well. And we are looking at providing even human resource to ensure that this investment that government is making in Funza Lushaka yields the requisite returns. And the next one is about the agreements. Many of these agreements have to do with the ELRC itself, and I'm sure, Chair, you wouldn't mind want me to spend more time in this. For those of you who are still members of unions, your subscription should have increased by now, or should be increasing. You should have received a notice that the subscription will be increased. If not this month, I think next month. It's also about strengthening some of the collective agreements that even relate to the PSEBC, and of course, factoring some of the changes that happened outside PEM. We are now bringing them in by amending the personnel administration measures so that they form part of that, because many changes happened, many resolutions have been signed, they now have to be incorporated into PEM. And this is just an indication that we're not only meeting at the ELRC, we do meet in other forums, we share platforms. I was part of the conference which was convened by SAOU in PE, which took place, I think, over 3 to 5 days there. Education, human resource and development, of course, we've been carrying out training here, particularly focusing on circuit managers, principals and school management teams, teachers in respect of math and science, Also looking at reading promotion, library information services, school management teams, as I said, particularly focusing on financial management and so on, as highlighted from the reports that we get from Corruption Watch, from some of the investigations that are conducted in some of the schools, that there's a need to strengthen knowledge and competencies around financial management at school level. Curriculum and Professional Development Institutes, the issue has been to integrate ICT in the development of managers and teachers, but also training managers of teacher centers to be able to provide quality services to our teachers and managers in our institutions. And they were trained on those areas that are indicated there. We've also identified 10 more teacher centers which are going to be equipped with ICT of the latest to provide support to teachers. And I'm sure we in our report, in our first quarterly report and fourth quarterly report, we did indicate that we've covered already 90 out of 147 teacher centers. And I'm told that the number is now even going over 100. Continuing professional development, more teachers and managers are forming part of this, working with the South African Council of Educators. You now have 143,761 participants who are part of this initiative. We're also continuing with our support in terms of English First Additional Language, particularly training subject advisors to cascade to teachers and school management teams. Educator performance management, development and whole school evaluation, we continue to monitor the implementation of IQMS, and the numbers are provided there in terms of the numbers of educators who are monitored to ensure that they do go through IQMS, but also focusing on personal growth plans as well as school improvement plans, linking the two so that it leads to improvement of learner performance. Teacher development and implementation, we've also been carrying out activities with the NECT to provide support to schools to improve performance in the National Senior Certificate. We've also been involved in curriculum research, diagnostic self-assessment tool for EFAL and mathematics, which we've reported on before. And those are the number of teachers who have gone through the training initiatives during quarter two. Program four is about quality and effective service delivery in basic education systems, but also improving our planning as well as assessment. We have achieved those targets there. The partial achievement that you see there wouldn't affect the writing of the exams currently, but it would be more, because we plan 18 months in advance, it would be more about supplementary exams. But quarter three and quarter four will make sure that that target is fully achieved. Well, the first three are annual targets. The lower one is around ACD. And I must say that planning poses a serious challenge for us here in ACD. I must be woefully truthful. I strongly believe, and the team shares the same thinking, that if we are to get our infrastructure delivery right, we need to engage in an 18-month planning cycle so that at least 6 months well in advance, you more or less know which projects are going to be carried out, to even start appointing, implementing agents and subsequently contractors even before the beginning of the financial year. But I must concede that even our supply management processes are not coming to the party on this one. And what we intend doing, I've written letters to Treasury to help us to strengthen this area. We are working with the Office of the OCPO, Office of the Chief Procurement Officer in National Treasury to help us to deal with this. But I thought I must just concede that it's an area of major weakness. And I am paying attention to it going forward. And I do know that there will be improvement, but because we have a long way to go, I'm also appealing for a bit of your patience and your understanding on this one. Well, in terms of this target, Chair, we partially achieved, and I think going forward for the third and the fourth quarter, there should be much improvement in those two areas. And the next ones, the next targets have been achieved. Safe to say that the other one is the annual target. And this one is the annual target. National assessment, of course, Anna, I'm sure we know by now, we reported previously, we've re-engineered annual national assessment. We now have something that you can safely call NAIF, which is the National Integrated Assessment Framework, which has three legs. Systemic evaluation or systemic assessment will now replace ANA, which will happen every 3 years in grade 3, 6, and 9. You'll also have diagnostic tests, which is part of Chapter 4 of CAPS. You also have summative evaluation, which is part of Chapter 4 of CAPS. We're bringing all these regimes together so that you've got an integrated assessment system which talk to each other, which is in keeping with international best practice. And I must just take a few minutes, Chair, to explain that it was absolutely necessary for us to administer ANA, given the history where we come from. Real monitoring in the classroom collapsed as early as 1986. Many of you know that. The inspectorate were not allowed to get into the classroom. And ever since then, the real monitoring in the classroom was not happening. And then with the advent of the democratic dispensation, we came with other measures that really replaced the inspectorate. But even those could not really salvage the quality of education. And we think that the administration of ANA since 2012 up to 2014 was absolutely necessary, and it has put together data that we could still use for the next 10 to 15 years. And we are now bringing our assessment regime in line with the rest of the world. Assessments are done every 3 years or every 5 years. Otherwise, they create an administrative burden which do not necessarily add value to the system. The likelihood is that you'll come up with the same results. Senior phase and grade 9 in particular is evidence in this regard. I just thought that I must spend a few minutes on that. The TIMSS results will be released on the 29th of this month. We're just saying that the administration took place, and the report is indeed final, and then we'll be getting that report on the 29th. In the fullness of time, we will come to your committee, Chair, to come and report, as we usually do, on the performance of our grade 5, on the performance of our grade 9s. The PILS results will be released next year. It's unlikely that it will be February. The initial indication was February, but there is a delay with analyzing the data and finalizing the data. SACMEC 4, Chair and Honorable Members, we still have a preliminary report. The SACMEC report has not been finalized as yet. The good news is that our team, together with experts from South Africa, met with the SACMEC team in Botswana. And I think we're very close to finalizing this report. And in the immediate future, we should be able to come back to you and say, here is the final report. The next one is about the National Senior Certificate and the Senior Certificate. I've already indicated that the exams are going on. Close to 680 full-time candidates are writing this exam, which is 9,000 plus more than learners that wrote last year. And let me remind you, Chair, the numbers have been growing phenomenally. In 1970, you had 48,000 candidates sitting for the exam. In 2016, we're talking about 600 and close to 680,000 learners who are now sitting for the exam. Information systems, the main issue has been the modernization of SASMs. In other words, the strengthening of SASMs so that we are able to rely on it, the data is more credible and so on, and working with other systems such as the Home Affairs system and so on to validate learners and even use the systems of Home Affairs to even validate learners of Karikude to reduce or even deal with the notion of fraudulent learners in the system. Financial planning, economic analysis, and provincial budget monitoring. We've been monitoring provinces, we've been meeting with Treasury to plan even for the next financial year. The main issue here has been to prepare for the next financial year, for the next academic year, and but the unpleasant news, so to speak, is that there are still provinces that fall below the threshold, the national norm of norms and standards for school funding. Limpopo being one of them, I've forgotten the other two, but I think there are three provinces that still fall far below the national norm. Chair, physical planning, it's been about delivering activities of the two grants, the CD and the EIG grant, and using NIMS to track our performance. And we're just indicating there, you know, the amount that is allocated and the amount that has been transferred. And I've already indicated that our performance has not been what we had expected on this one. In a city, these are the figures in terms of schools, sanitation, water, electricity, you know, employment created there. District planning, we've been involved at district level planning. This is Kyobeka's branch, driving norms and standards for staffing for districts. It's been a very difficult road because although our responsibility is to determine norms and standards, getting compliance, you'll agree with me that it's a challenge. Provinces are citing all kinds of things, the constrained fiscal space, budget cuts and so on, which are beginning to eat from personnel and et cetera. But the branch has also been involved on capacity building activities, particularly for those foot soldiers that are supporting schools and so on. The branch has also been involved in school level planning, linking the planning instruments at district, at circuit level, and what happens at school level. And these are the circuit managers who are involved, and the number of schools as indicated there. The branch has also been carrying out national and provincial coordination in terms of the calendar that we follow. But what is significant is that we've also been looking at the impact of using one calendar for all provinces. At some point, we're of the view that splitting the country into two, it helps in terms of the traffic flows, reducing the number of accidents and so on, but you are subjecting that to an empirical exercise, which is what the branch is doing. And I think at the right time we'll be able to share with you. It might appear as being a side issue from the activity of the branch, but it's very important. It also determines the level of safety and the traffic nationally in the country. The response through call centers and so on, we've surpassed the threshold of 70%, as you can see, which has been set by the presidency. We're well over 90. Oversight meetings, members will appreciate that the minister, in announcing the grade 12 results, indicated, and during her budget speech, both in the National Assembly and the NCOP, she did indicate that the focus is going to be on these three provinces. We have visited these three provinces more than we have visited the rest. We have. And there is evidence that we share with you, which we'll continue to share with you. We've also had what we call the roadshows to all the nine provinces. The main issue was to align what we do on a daily basis with the implementation of the MDP. These meetings were attended by the minister, myself, the officials, the branch heads who are there, who were able to attend some of these meetings. And we share with you some of the pictures of these activities. And the meetings were divided into meeting the district officials, meeting the principals. The instruction given by the minister is that these meetings will be a permanent feature of our activities. We'll have to carry them beginning of the year and towards the end of the year. Beginning of the year is to evaluate on the ground the state of readiness to engage with activities of that year. Towards the end of the year will be to gauge the implementation of plans and to start to anticipate plans for the ensuing school calendar. And these are some of the pictures of the minister and the rest of the officials. School readiness, we carry out what we call the pre-closure assessment support, where a selected few of officials from DVE will go out and just prepare for the school readiness exercise next year, when everybody, parliamentarians from national, provincial, councillors, will be going out to monitor the reopening of schools. But this team from DVE will be going out to just give us a deep stick sense of how things are and what are the things that should be targeted when we go out to monitor school readiness beginning of the school calendar year. Chair, the last program is about educational enrichment services, which is about implementing policies and programs to improve the quality of learning in schools to support, of course, curriculum implementation. In this program, we've not underachieved in any of the targets. We've partially achieved. And the program involves care and support, school feeding. We've reported to you about this, and we continue to provide feeding. We continue to monitor. 85% of the schools that were monitored were found to be compliant, and these were 90 schools that were monitored in the 23 districts in 8 provinces. The deworming programs, we acknowledge the low coverage here. We want to heighten our services working with the Department of Health, and we're looking at strengthening the program going forward. Psychosocial support is another important area. Provinces are at different levels of providing this service. We are preparing ourselves for 2017 to strengthen the provision of this service. And the approach that we are taking, Chair, is that psychosocial support services should not be institutionally based, but it must be in a form of a multidisciplinary team that services a cluster of schools based at district level. given the fact that, on a lighter note, we are not the Saudi Arabia of Africa. We don't have all the resources that are required to provide psychosocial services at institution level. Because some schools have got more than others, so we are locating that at district level. HIV and AIDS, we are also strengthening the provision of this. Of course, having learned from the preliminary report of SACMEC that we have taken our foot off the pedal in terms of the knowledge level of learners, but also educators, we want to strengthen training there. We have been carrying out training, but also what is instructive to us are the findings of the HIV and AIDS conference, which was held this year in the country, which indicated that the prevalence rate among young people is starting to pick up again. So we think that we need to use this grant to counter that. School safety, here the focus is about really accelerating the implementation of the National School Safety Framework and to make sure that the school safety committees exist in all the 25,000 schools and really add value to enhancing safety in these institutions. Enrichment and sports, the ABC Motsepe School, Eisenhower Fort, is really a highlight in this quarter. And I think that this program continues to grow year to year. We've also had your winter games in terms of sports. The Spelling Bee, South Africa, and Reading Club is another important activity that has been carried out. The Moot Court is a build-up up to international level, but at this stage, we still at national level from provinces, local, and so on. And then the Inkosi Albert Luthuli Oral History Program. It's also a very important program in the department that continues to enjoy the requisite participation and support from our young people. And we're providing information there in terms of what happened in the second quarter. Youth Citizens Action Program is also another important activity that we carried out during this quarter under review. The 60-year commemoration of the 1956 Women March, focusing on the girl learner, is a very important highlight of this quarter. The draft protocol on discrimination, as part of our journey towards creating a South Africa that we want, a rainbow nation of Nelson Mandela, this contributes in that respect as well. Chair, this slide only provides reasons that I've covered already as to why have we underperformed in certain areas and so on. I'm then going to request, I know that the CFO will take about 5 to 10 minutes to finish the last part.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I'm not going to go into too much detail because this presentation is, this part is exactly the same as the previous one. But maybe on the introduction slide, one thing to note is the last bullet, which indicates that the Karigude and annual national assessments are no longer earmarked funds. So they will not be appearing on the earmarked fund slide, as we normally show them separately.
And then
on the next slide, we are just showing expenditure per the various areas, that is conditional grants and so on. And it's showing that we have spent 52.59% and how it's broken down. And this is the detail of that 52.959. Program, but maybe to note on this slide is that there are programs, two programs maybe to mention, Program 2 and Program 3, where Program 2 is showing a bit of under expenditure if we were to take a straight line method. But as I indicated in the previous presentation, some of the activities take place at a later time in the financial year. For instance, if we look at Program 2, workbooks have been developed. Workbook 1 has been was printed, and development is almost complete for Workbook 1, and Workbook 2 is in the process of being printed. But payments for this are still coming in. For instance, we have the Workbook 1, but we haven't paid for delivery. That will be paid once it has been completed. So this expenditure will then increase at that stage. And the other area in Program 2 is the Second Chance Program, which is currently at planning stage for implementation for 2017. And the printing of past matric question papers and other Mind the Gap study guides, math science textbooks are currently underway. So once these activities have been completed, then the expenditure will increase in Program 2. And then for Program 3, we normally transfer the bulk of the money to Funza Lushaka at the beginning of the financial year. Hence, this program is always showing like we are going to overspend, but we don't overspend. It's how the projections are made so that there's enough money for the students for payment of registration and so on. And then the remaining 10% is made in January for registration for the new academic year. Hence, we have that difference of 10% left on the Funza Lushaka allocation. And then this slide is showing expenditure per economic classification. And then on this one, we are showing a bit of under expenditure on compensation of employees. But the reason for that is because it includes examiners and moderators. And as we know, we pay for examiners and moderators after the exam that is currently taking place. Hence, I said earlier that some of these activities are not on a straight line basis. And then for goods and services, we are also showing under expenditure, which is 27.77%. And this is related to the workbooks printing, as I indicated earlier. And then transfers and subsidy are also a bit high at 60.74%. And this is also related to the transfer of Funza Lushaka, which is a bit high. And then payments of capital assets, it's low. And this has to do with the RCD program. DG explained with the infrastructure what is happening there, so I won't get into that one. And then this is more detail on the economic classification. I explained the examiners and moderators, as you can see, there is 25.86%. That is already paid at the moment, and the rest will be paid after the exam has taken place. Transfers and transfer to public entities is mainly the NSFAS part, transfer to NSFAS with regard to the Funza Lushaka program that I also explained earlier. And then the school infrastructure backlog grant would be the RCD program, where there's the spending is a bit low at this moment. And then we have the earmarked funds. And with regard to the earmarked funds, it would be the workbooks, where expenditure for workbooks, I have explained that that will still take place. So it will increase once the transfer has been made. And then departmental operation, for departmental operation, we are showing a bit of over expenditure on departmental operation. And the reason for the departmental operation is that there has been budget cuts at the end of the previous financial year. We know that there has been overall budget cuts by National Treasury. So some activities were already planned and they had to continue. But we have shifted funds to accommodate the over expenditure in the adjustment estimate. So because that had not been approved at this stage, we couldn't reflect the shift. But in the next report, we will be able to show that we have shifted funds to cover that over expenditure. And then projects with regard to ANA, the department appointed examiners that would develop diagnostic assessment tools, and the rollout of the assessment tools will be in January 2017, so that expenditure will increase. And then the Karagudet classes started on 1 November, and the payment of stipend to volunteers will also be influenced because there will be payments in this regard. And then here is just the details of the earmarked funds and the spending thereof. And the EPWP Karagude is still showing 0%, but because classes have started, there will be expenditure against that item once payments are made, payment of stipends to the volunteers. And Matric Second Chance, as I explained, planning is still underway for the 27 academic year, or for the learners after the exam that is currently going on, to give those learners the second chance, and the expenditure will then increase. And maybe the other item to note is the HIV and AIDS conditional grant, which is at 40%. This one I must just explain that how it's transferred, mostly, or most of the conditional grants, we transfer 25% per quarter. But this one is done differently. It's a bit small at the beginning of the financial year during planning and so on. And then it increases as the, excuse me, it increases as the financial year continues. And then transfers to public entities and other transfers. These transfers, most of them, maybe the first one, Funzalo Shaka, is the one where we transfer 90% at the beginning of the financial year and 10% at the beginning of the academic year for registration. And then Umalusi has been transferred as projected. And then the remaining transfers on this slide are usually made in the last quarter of the financial year. So we will show, they will be reflected in the in that quarter payments in this regard. I think that is all, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the presentation. And I think, DG, also on this issue that you have raised, as you say, well, let me start here. There are things as a portfolio committee we strongly believe are the core function of the department. And for you to raise that, there are some of those core functions that solely rely on donor funding. It's a little bit disturbing, but I'm happy that you raised that. Like the underperformance that we see in program two, of which I don't think it all as well with the committee, because we believe where we talk of those monitoring and so forth, that is the core business of you as the department. And with the reports that you have continuously been getting as a committee, that is the monitoring that we just want to see, so that we can see that the department finds its feet there and something is happening in school. But for the fact that you have raised it, we hope and believe those are the things that in future we won't find, we won't encounter. Same thing with the RCD, it's quite problematic. But let me open up for honourable members to engage with the presentation on the second quarterly report that you have just presented. Honourable members, can I start with you, Honourable Kosa, Honourable Davis, Honourable Boshoff, Honourable Ngoni, Honourable Mugoto. You can come in, Honourable Kosa.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning to everyone. I'll just start, Chairperson, by what you have just been saying, because it is one of my questions. That on program two, which to my take is a core business of the department, it seems to have underspent. I wanted to know, Chair, as to what can be the challenges resulting to the underspending. The other issue, Chair, is my observation is that during winter and spring schools, the business seems to be more serious than during the normal time allocated for teaching and learning. I wonder if this chairperson, if the department has got have noticed that. Then I wanted to know, chairperson, as to what is it that is being done during this period that cannot be done during normal period. If my observation is the same as yours, department, what are the plans to be able to ensure that we turn around this issue so that the normal period enjoys much support with regard to teaching and learning. The other issue is with regard the review of ANA. The review on ANA is there a time frame as to when it's gonna be concluded? Come 2017, we'll be able to be starting fresh and you see doing it properly. Because you seem to have developed an alternative to ANA, which is called KNIFE, that I've just heard now. With this KNIFE issue as an alternative, are the labor unions involved with this development? Are we not going to experience resistance if going it alone, if maybe we are not involving them? The last issue is with regard NSNP chair. It is reported on slide 63 that 8 provinces have been visited. I just wanted to ask this question as to which province happen to be lucky or unlucky to be visited. I want us maybe. I just want to check consistency with regard to oversight. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you,
Thank you, Chair. Thank you to the department for the presentation. Just like to, I've got 6 questions, so I'm just going to go through them systematically. The first one is on the MOU and the MOA that you mentioned with Cuba and South Korea. If you could just give us some more details on exactly what is in those memorandums, please, or memoranda. The second question relates to the technical occupational pilot as part of the 3 streams model. Can you tell us when is this pilot going to begin exactly, and where is the pilot taking place, which districts, which provinces, which schools? And Chair, may I ask you while we're on the subject if we could schedule perhaps a full briefing on the 3-stream model, maybe sometime in the new year? Because I think it's important that this committee gets a full briefing on the 3-stream model. I know that the Minister has spoken much about it and she believes quite strongly in it, so I think it would be quite good for us to get a full briefing on that 3-stream model. My third questions relate to the Karigude Literacy Program. When will the program be phased out exactly? Is this the final year of the program? And if so, will the shortfall, we know that last year there was a shortfall of about 130,000 beneficiaries. Will all of those beneficiaries who should have benefited actually benefit before the program is phased out? And then also related to that, what measures are in place to prevent the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, as we saw with the program in the last financial year, the 44 million rand worth of fruitless and wasteful expenditure, because obviously we don't want to repeat that going forward. Then the DG mentioned the post-provisioning problems. He mentioned that there was a report, and I wonder if the committee could be furnished with that report, please, DG. That would be great, thank you. And then the CIDI program, I think this is a big concern to all of us that there's underspending, and my colleague just mentioned the underspending. DG, can you just tell us precisely in a nutshell, why is there this underspending? Why is the CIDI program failing? And Chair, I also think that we should schedule a full report back on the CIDI program, given that it is such a problem and such a challenge for us. And I wonder if I can ask you if also in the new year, if we can schedule a full report from the department on the CIDI program. And then lastly, Annas. The DG mentioned a concept document on the proposed new system of systemics and diagnostic tests. Would you please furnish the committee with that concept document so that we can be apprised of that? And just lastly on that, previously one of the criticisms of the Annas was that the data wasn't comparable year on year, so it was difficult to make any comparisons from one set of data to the next. And I wonder if that will be rectified in this new system. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chair. With regard to Program 3, the Funza Lushaka bursaries, how many of these bursary holders do finalize their courses? How many of them fell through the wayside? And do they have to reimburse the department as they should actually do with NSFAS? And then I see in Program 3 you speak about a final draft report of the evaluation of the Ukufundu or Ukufunda Virtual School has been produced. When can we see that? And then just lastly, Program 4 with regard to the building of new schools. How many new schools or schools for special needs education have been upgraded, if we could have a report on that as well? And then, the 22 draft subjects that have been finalized for special needs education, what subjects are they? And how are they going to be implemented if we do not have appropriately trained educators that teach at these schools? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Ladies and gentlemen, I also welcome the presentation by the department. My question is based on Program 3, the high spending. It's almost 84.87%. That now we have that spending. Shall we be having funds to sustain the program itself? I don't know. And also, you also spoke about value for money. This is still there. Then on the issue of the IQMS, in our meeting last week, it was indicated that, I don't remember whether the minister has signed or the minister has left to sign, but I think it was signed in March. What is the progress thus far? QMS, because we're still talking about IQMS now. And then when do we start with the same program, QMS? Because in our last meeting, it was indicated that yes, IQMS is done, as we are reporting about it here. But the emphasis was the ineffectiveness of the IQMS. Just to put a point there, is this thing IQMS not effective, or it just needed some revamp? Because last week, we must not have the contradictory statements here. It must be said blankly whether is it ineffective or it needs just a revamp. Because according to you last time, we wanted to change for QMS because you wanted more the principals to come in there. But last week I was very much disturbed when you said IQMS is ineffective. I had a problem with it. The issue of ASIDI. The ASIDI is done here in cool Cape Town, Western Cape, and sometimes the same Cape. Hey, when is it going to other provinces? You remember that there is an issue of asbestos issues There are asbestos schools in Mpumalanga and the like. When is it going there? Because it still has to address those issues. There's this program that has to replace ANA. I don't know whether it's well correctly spelled. If we say it's NAIF, can't it be NIAF? I mean, NIAF, because when you say NAIF, I read it. It's, to me, it says National Integrated Assessment Framework. NIAS. Well, we must correct sometimes, but I don't know whether I'm right. Once we say NAIF, then we say National Assessment Integrated, then we are playing with words there. If we can check there. And then the other issue is the issue of mathematics. If you remember well, DG, we did indicate that, you know, at the present moment, you fail maths, you fail. It is one of the condemnation items. And we asked, do we have teachers who have got maths now? And we said, no, why do we put that in? And we were promised that you are going to check that so that you can don't put pressure. You cannot disadvantage learners on something that we are disadvantaged ourselves. Lastly, the School of School Readiness in 2017. 2014, we visited all the schools, and we are unlucky because we visit one and the same schools in our constituencies. One and the same schools. When you come there, they ask you, we told you those things the previous year, and the other year, and subsequent other years before. What support did you give? What support did you give? And you're even afraid to go and to visit those schools again. Do we have any measures to make sure that when we have visited, you know, when a member of parliament has come in, people expect miracles. They expect you to be, you understand, you cannot keep on explaining. They will tell us, you are not true in your words. You don't keep your own words. We visited, we tell you the same thing. Now they won't be telling us. Remember, these people now, they become much arrogant. What do we do with those issues that we come up with? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chair. DG, thanks for the report. I have a few issues, some of which they have been raised by my colleagues. Chairperson, I just wanted to check on the issue of monitoring of provinces, because like you remember when we adopted the APP and the START plan, the department indicated to us that they are going to focus more on monitoring than the actual implementation. I just wanted to check on that one. Maybe if you can appraise us how it's happening, because if you look on page 7, on slide number 2, the bottom one, on 2.3.3, they talk about desktop monitoring. And then I'm just raising it as an example, Chairperson, which can be noted, and then also applies to other areas, DG. Maybe if you can brief us on the verification of this desktop monitoring that is happening, because I see that the department has got a low target of 20, of which, in my view, I think that at least the department could be giving us something. Even on the annual target that has been highlighted, how do you ensure that in the milestone we are able to, the milestones that we achieve during the course of the event, we are able to avoid under expenditure, we are able to make sure that we don't wait until the last moment to identify the problems. Like there is an early detection system that is in place. Linked to that chairperson is the issue of checking with the department whether this report, together with the previous one, did the internal audit do any work on it, and then how have you performed? Because, you know, at the end of the year, we get an annual report, and there will be a report of the auditor general. Because, like, let's say, chairperson, in the first, quarter, at school level, at school you check, let's say, in first quarter, when the performance of learners will tell you if the learners are going to pass at the end of the year, second term, the same thing, the third term, you'll be able to detect, and you already know that how many bachelors do you have in terms of the performance of each learner, and then what does your internal audit say in terms of this report? Did you get a clean audit? Did you get unqualified? In terms of your own internal audit, was it audited? Chairperson, the second question would relate to the issue of the issue of Anna was raised, and then my question is whether there has been an indication by the stakeholders that they are going to support you on this. Is there an agreement between all stakeholders? There is a program that is on that one of South Africa and JICA on maths that has been piloted in the Northwest and Eastern Cape. I just wanted to check when are you phasing it out and introducing a countrywide rollout? The other point relates to a delayed implementation of some program. I thought that when we report this time, we will not talk about a CDS if we are the actual implementers as DBE, because I thought that this program lies in the presidential coordinating. Excuse me? PACC. Yes. Because there is a lot of opportunities that has been lost, Chairperson, in terms of jobs, especially looking at the implementation of the program in the Eastern Cape, where in the opportunities to create jobs and even just to build local economy, they have been lost by this delay. And even for us as a department, I just wanted to check on that one. How do we plan to ensure that we don't lose that value for money, and we compensate for the lost opportunities and that are caused by that delay? And then maybe the last point, Chairperson, is on the issue of rationalization. Maybe if the department can brief us on the latest development, because I heard the CFO talking about an agreement that has been reached, and that now, you know, the process is going to start rolling much faster in the Eastern Cape, and to check also whether the process has started being implemented, the blockages have been unblocked already. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, even for the questions, honorable members. But DG, for me, what is remarkable with your presentation today is to come up upfront and acknowledge the challenges, and it's easier for us even to get into them. You know, you talk on the issue of strengthening internal controls, which is one of the things that we have been talking about so much as a committee, and with the hope that you have just given us that, and the hope that we even got from the ages report when we're dealing with our annual report, it shows that they, incrementally there is something that you are doing within the department. But I know the one on Karugude has been asked, and it was well covered by the question. It's one of the areas, DG, where we ever encounter problems. Same with RCT. And we have acknowledged the issues of planning even around the RCT, as to say, at least for me, we are saying we are moving forward, you acknowledge it, and we are coming up with the interventions that you are coming up with as a department. My question will be on salary negotiations. I'm not sure which year are we on the cycle, but I know it has been mentioned in your presentation. It's one of the things that always causes instability in the system. If you can just appraise us as to say, where are you? Are we in the last year of the cycle? What is it? Where are you with the negotiations? Are we not going to, because it's good for us to gear up for the rough start of the year, if ever that is the last year of the salary of the cycle. So I'm also very interested to hear on that one. Can I hand over to you then to respond to the number of issues that have been raised by honourable members?
Thank you, honourable chairperson and honourable members. I am going to request colleagues to respond to questions that are within specific line functions. Maybe I could start with Dr. Whittle for the social cohesion programs, and then after that Mr. Mafuku will deal with infrastructure, and then I haven't picked up specific issues except for MOU and MOA, Cuba and Korea. I'm not sure Mrs. Kuman will be able to assist that, but if you can't, but I'm sure I'll cover it. Then Mrs. Jobeka can maybe help us with issues of school readiness. Then Mr. Mpanza will deal with issues of the planning branch. Then Dr. Mavoya, the CFO, then I'll deal with the rest.
Thanks, DJ.
Sorry, Chair. Mr. Rabotapi has come in the area of teachers and human resource provisioning. QMS, IQMS, he'll help us with that before the CFO. Sorry.
Thanks, DJ. Thank you, Chairperson. Mine was around why only 8 and not 9 monitored for National School Nutrition. The ninth province is the Western Cape, and it's because it's scheduled for the third quarter.
Thank you, Chair. The first question raised by Honourable Davis around the challenges relating to RCD, the DG in the presentation, and I think the CFO alluded to some of the issues. I'll just briefly raise two issues that have bedeviled the program. The first one is the issue around rationalization. And I think Honorable Mokoto also raised the matter that we have currently 216 schools in the Eastern Cape that are affected by the process of rationalization. And we have been unable to allocate those projects to implementing agents because of this process of rationalization that has not been moved. A team was appointed to deal with the issues, the issue of rationalization specifically in the Eastern Cape. And at present, we are ready. In fact, we are in the process of allocating 61 schools to implementing agents, and we expect to see movement in that regard before the end of the financial year. The second issue that relates to basic services, water and sanitation, was the underperformance by two IAs, specifically IDT and CSIR. And we had to terminate our relationship with those two entities, and the process of getting replacement IAs has been quite slow in terms of our supply chain processes, which is one thing that the DG has alluded to. However, that process has been resolved, and we are in the process of appointing replacement IAs, and we are confident that those projects would be completed before the end of the financial year. The question around schools that have been completed for learners with special needs by Honorable Boshoff. I've been trying to quickly go through my records, and DG, I will have to come back to the Honorable Member with specific names. I tend to remember that there was a parliamentary question on this particular matter that we are in the process of responding to, but we will provide the names of those schools that have been completed for learners with special education needs. Honorable Mguni, where the other provinces where ASIDI has been involved, just to run quickly, for instance, in terms of inappropriate structures, in the Eastern Cape we have completed 126 schools, in the Free State 12 schools have been completed, in Limpopo 3, Mpumalanga 5, Northwest 2, Northern Cape 1, and Western Cape 21. In total, we have 170 schools that have been completed. That is with regards to your inappropriate structures. And we have projects in terms of provision of electricity, sanitation, and water in all the 9 provinces as well. We can provide the information in terms of the numbers as well as the names of schools where projects have been completed as part of the ICD program. All the 9 provinces have certainly benefited from this program. The issue of asbestos schools as well, that was raised by Honorable Mguni Chair. We are part of a team that is led by the Department of Environmental Affairs that is dealing with the challenges relating to asbestos schools. If I may give an example with the Northern Cape, for instance, you'd find that the school is part of a whole village that is in an asbestos area. So rehabilitating a school in an area that is in itself an asbestos area would not solve the problem. So that is the process that is being dealt with by the Department of Environmental Affairs with all the affected departments together with the presidency to find a solution to those. We are dealing with, for instance, the Northwest, Northern Cape, Limpopo, and Mpumalanga, and parts of Gauteng as well that have those kinds of areas in terms of asbestos that we are trying to find a solution to dealing with those. The last one from Honorable Mokoto, the PICC is a coordinating structure. The PICC is not implementing projects. So the role of the PICC would be if there are challenges, for instance, that you would refer them to the PICC to unlock. For instance, when we had challenges with ESCOM, we referred the matter to the PICC and they assisted in terms of unlocking the challenges that we have with ESCOM and so on. The last one around value for money. What we are doing, for instance, Chair, in terms of the Eastern Cape, you have out of the 61 schools that I have alluded to earlier on, that we are allocating in the Eastern Cape, for instance. We are going the alternative technology route in those schools. For instance, those are your small but very isolated schools where even if it's a small school, you cannot, you have to provide a structure for those kinds of schools. So for all intents and purposes, we are making sure that our learners, irrespective of where they are, they do not lose the benefit of having a good education as a result of this program. So definitely issues around value for money are being addressed. But over and above that, the issues of job creation, even if we go the alternative technology route, we are looking at issues of job creation by making sure that your local communities are part of those projects as they are implemented. I think I've covered the, all the issues, Chair.
Honourable Chair, Stemwele, and honourable members, with respect to school readiness, firstly I'll speak to the general process that we follow. Once we have done visits, or parliamentarians have conducted their visits and raised issues with us, the first thing we do as a DBE is to look at those issues that we as a DBE can assist with, and we do that. But as you know, schools are primarily managed by provinces, and we then ask the provinces to deal with specific issues that we believe they have the responsibility to deal with. We do this both administratively, but also by presenting these to HEDCOM and to CEM. What we then factor into our monitoring is that mid-year we go back to those schools that had challenges to try and see whether issues have been addressed. And it is true what Honourable Mguni says. Sometimes you find that issues that you thought would have been resolved are not resolved, but we carry on and we try to see how to push the provinces to respond. With respect to, and I just want to link to your recent visits to the Eastern Cape and to Limpopo, we have made progress around many of the individual issues and individual schools that you raised issues on, and we're hoping that when we present to the committee on the 22nd, I think, of November, we will be able also to show what movement there has been around those issues. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thanks, Chairperson. Maybe firstly, starting with the easy one, there was a request to share with the committee the Deloitte and Touche report about PPN. Will facilitate that through your office, Chair. The second report was request was about getting the concept document about NIAF or remodeled ANA. Will also provide that report, Chair. Then there was a question about whether there was an agreement with the social partners regarding the remodeled integrated annual assessment framework. Chairperson, DPE had a structure involving unions. It was a technical task team. We worked with our social partners. I was chairperson of that task team. We reported back to our principals, the DG and the and high officials from social partners. I will really, but DG will add, my assessment is that there is an agreement with social partners regarding the remodel framework. And the only issue that they were raised, it was about the frequency, which we also created now a task team to look in terms of the frequency of these tests, because we find that the districts will have common tests, circuits, even some provinces like Western Cape also, that was a concern that they raised, and the DG established through the curriculum to task him to look into those issues. Maybe then also there were concern about then the final integrity, like to say the systemic evaluation, who will, they don't want a private company, they will prefer. So those are operational issues that we are further, but overall really there is an agreement with our social partners. Coming back to now the last one, the rationalization of smaller non-viable schools. You see, Chairperson, this process, it's really, it's a social process. Because what I've learned is that, I mean, communities are attached to schools because some of the schools are named after the chiefs, but really, especially Eastern Cape, while we acknowledge that previously when they implemented this process was a bit chaotic, but they've put up now a project. It's led by the former HOD, Mr. Jonathan Gordon. They've identified 2,077 schools for rationalization. But out of that, 175 schools, they closed on their own. Because these honorable members, what I've learned, parents, they are voting with their learners. If there are issues of teaching in a school, parents just simply take their learners away from that school. I was here, Chairperson, with the select committee, where they reported that in Eastern Cape, one school had very few learners, but the next door, there were a lot of, the school was overcrowding. So you can see there. So I would say that in Eastern Cape, the process is going very well. They are now dealing with 1,902 schools. They were served with Section 33 letters, according to SASSA, informing them about the pending merger and closures. But also, it's about engagement with the communities. Maybe that's where we'll request honorable members, because really this process is done with the sole purpose of protecting the interest of the learners, the performance. Because it's only in Limpopo, KZN, and Eastern Cape. If you look at the statistics, 5 years going back, you can see that the number of these small and non-viable schools had not decreased, because according to our guidelines, the primary school is 135, high school is 200. But in this province, we find schools with 50, 20 learners, whereas our model of post-provisioning, it won't allow that school to operate optimally. So I will say that also in Limpopo, they've ran with the project very well. They even were given additional funding to deal with scholar transport by provincial treasurer. So it's only in KwaZulu-Natal where the process has slowed down, but we'll intervene with the DG to make sure that the process is going well. But in Eastern Cape, as I indicated, where it's a huge problem, I think the process is going well. Even on this coming Friday, there will be a meeting with the teams now to look in terms of how many schools that have signed off those 633 letters, the communication, the consultation, because the guidelines are very clear in terms of what are the steps that need to be followed before the school is merged or closed.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mbanza. Though I think DG and honorable members, another point is being raised here as to say, how do we identify the schools that are going to be merged or closed? By the example that Mr. Mbanza has just come up with, for me it says we need to be very careful and strategic. It can happen, as he has been saying, that we as parents, we first look at the performance of the school, then we vote with our feet. It does not mean that there are no learners in the area. but it talks to the issue of management to that school and the issue of commitment to the teachers, you know. So 2 years down the line, we can find that school A does not have learners, and we say it warrants it to be merged, of which it doesn't. We need to fix what is wrong with this, with the neighboring schools. And I mean to say, it's a huge problem, the issue of rationalization, that we need to trade with, you know, very carefully when we deal with it, because at a long run, once we do it haphazardly, it's going to haunt us at the end of the day again. If we don't plan, DG, I want to go back to what you opened with us to say, planning and proper planning. That is what we need to, you know. There's so much that we have done as a department, but if you don't plan properly, I'm telling you, we'll be seated here in few years to come again, looking back and just to say, we did not do well on that and that. But this issue of rationalization, it's causing a problem, and it will continue once we don't do it well. But again, let me propose, DG, on this issue. The one on the report that you have just reported, that you are going to be getting it, for me, again, it warrants the program for EQLTC. If provinces have not been doing this, and the public out there, when you talk of Peter Mokel's model, he's just a demon. Even to a person who does not understand what is this, but go to the Eastern Cape, everyone will be saying, yes, you know, honorable members, I'm so fond of Peter Mokel. Sometimes we are even afraid to ask community members to say, what is this Peter Mokel's model that we are talking about? But, you know, it is the thing that has been grilled, as to say, this is wrong, the department is doing wrong. If there is such a report, for me, really, I'm also on the idea, let us share that report with us. It will also assist us. But go out again as the department. Go out, let the public know that they were not implementing these things, and these are the findings, so that we correct even the attitude of the communities towards this, so that we can see our department functioning well. But again, it's one thing that you are sponsoring. Let us see the unit of IQLTC going around explaining such things to our community, because they are the bridge. We hope next time when we meet with the QLTC, we'll have more programs for them to say, this is what is happening, this is what we have been doing, this is how we've been bridging the gap between the department and the communities. Thank you. I am not sure, DG, who was to follow.
Tell my boy.
Okay. I will open up for the follow-ups.
Honorable Chair and Honorable Member. The first response will be to the issue of monitoring, as to why does it look like it's happening mostly during winter. And probably it's because of the pictures that we provided in the report. And those pictures do not necessarily suggest that the only time we monitor is when we monitor winter classes. Monitoring is happening throughout the year. I think even the APP does show that we are monitoring in each and every quarter. And it's not only DBE that is monitoring. We also have monitoring that is being done by provinces, and monitoring that is also being done by districts. So it does happen throughout the year. It's not only in winter. And probably the reason why we have pictures that talk to the monitoring of winter classes, it is because of it is one of the major programs that is running at the time of the year. But it doesn't mean that throughout the year we are not monitoring. And then the other question from Honorable Kosa was with regard to under expenditure in Program 2, which I think the CFO will talk to. I think she had already indicated that much as we have thresholds in terms of expenditure per quarter, which is 25% per quarter, but unfortunately the way we spend and the way activities are run, they would not be in that linear fashion all the time. You would have periods where there is a lot of activity that is happening. For instance, in our case, one of the major cost drivers there would be the expenditure on the MST grant. And with the MST grant, most of the expenditure would be realized in the third term onwards.
So I think she also cited some of the activities that would, that we are going to spend on going forward. And then Honorable Davis, with regard to the technical occupational pathway, which is part of the three-stream model, you asked about the pilot. Yes, we are piloting in 2017, and we are piloting in about 100 schools throughout the country, and most of these schools are your schools of skill, as we know them. And then we are at the stage where the subjects, as we reported, have been finalized, 26 subjects altogether, and the qualification framework has already been developed. It has been approved by CEM for submission to Umalusi, where Umalusi, we are in constant engagement with Umalusi around the framework itself. And once Umalusi has approved the framework, then that will be registered through South African Qualifications Authority. But indeed, we will provide a full report on the whole three streams model, not only on the third stream or on the third pathway. And then Karigude. Yes, Karigude has been, this is the last year of Karigude, that is 2016, and we have already developed a phase-out plan with regard to, you know, human resources, with regard to the assets that belong to Karigude, etc. And altogether, initially, we had about 4.7 beneficiaries for Karigude. And up to so far, we have been able to cover 4.2 million beneficiaries, or the target, as you may say. And then for 2016-2017, although our target was very high, which is 500 and something thousand, which was aimed at closing the 4.7 million that was initially targeted, but as of now, the classes have started, and we have about 100 and something thousand learners who have already started. And the major problem really would be around issues of, you know, when the recruitment is done, you would have a long list that would be very close to your target. But once we subject the list to the process of verification, then you would find that other beneficiaries are deceased, others have been on the program before, which we would call recycled learners, and therefore they will have to be eliminated, and ultimately you'll be left with a very small number. So indeed, we are moving towards closing the target. And then with regard to fruitless expenditure that we experienced with this program, that was mainly around internal controls which were not in place. So what we have tried to do this year, we have a plan to say what is it that we are going to do to address all the issues that were raised by the Auditor General. Among those things would be issues of verification of the learners themselves, so that when we say this list is an authentic list, then we know exactly that it has gone through the necessary processes. As it is, we've got two processes that we subject the list to, the first one being taking the list to the Department of Home Affairs. Then once it has been okayed by the Department of Home Affairs, then we subject the list to another process where we check whether these learners have they not participated in the project before. So if they have participated, then we remove them. Those are some of the things that we are doing to try to address all the issues that led to the fruitless expenditure that we have in the program. We also had the policy on recruitment, which was approved by the accounting officer, and also the issue of the sliding scales with regard to the payments of stipends. Because in the main, the issues that were raised by the AG were with regard to the number of learners for which a particular volunteer was being paid, such that if we say a class should be having 15, so the Auditor General would think that the class was supposed to be 15 throughout. Whereas with a sliding scale that we are using, it might be that for learners from 12 to this many, we are paying so much. For learners who are this and so many, so it's a sliding scale, and that has also been approved. The only problem that we had with this sliding scale that we were using throughout the years is that it was never approved by the accounting officer. So we have made it a point that all these things are being approved. And Honorable Mguni, requirements, past requirements for mathematics, yes indeed, we have identified that as a problem, more so because we have since engaged on this matter and realized that really there are kids who would not necessarily do mathematics when they get to grade 10. Others would opt for Maths Lit. And yet when they are in grade 9, the requirement, one of the compulsory requirements, is that they should pass Maths at 40%. So we are looking into that, and one of the options that we are looking at is to say we could leave their past requirements as they are, but perhaps have what you call a conditional pass, so that if it happens that you did not meet all the requirements, such that, for instance, in Maths, you're not getting 40%, but you have met other requirements, then we could simply say, yes, you pass, provided that when you get to grade 10, you do Maths Lit. So that's one of the options that we are looking at. And Honorable Mkoto, on the issue of monitoring, monitoring has been done, but we also need to take cognizance of the fact that it is being done in various ways. One of the ways that we would consider as our the normal way of doing it would be your on-site monitoring. And there are other ways in which we are monitoring, including your desktop monitoring, including, you know, your other fora where we do the reporting. In particular, with regard to curriculum, we have what you call the TDCM, which is the HEDCOM subcommittee, where provinces are reporting, and that's one way in which we are doing the monitoring. We are doing it also through what we call inter-provincial meetings. We are also doing it through provincial reports. So indeed, monitoring is happening in different ways. But I think the critical question that you asked was to say, how do we verify whatever information that we gathered through the desktop? We do have ways of monitoring. The reason why we have various ways is because we also use that also to triangulate whatever information that we would have gathered. But we also use the reports from provinces to also verify what we gathered through other means other than, you know, site visiting. And the target of 20, yes, it looks very small, but I think considering the fact that DBE is the only, is not the only department that is doing monitoring. Remember, even the provinces are monitoring, the districts are also monitoring. So 20 might really look very small if you only think that it's been monitoring has been done by DBE. And 20, I must say, is in addition to what provinces and districts are also monitoring. And it is also done, I think the number, we are a little bit conservative in terms of numbers that we target because of also the financial position of the department. So in the interest of efficiencies, in the usage of resources, and also using resources sparingly, we would maybe try to not to go too wide in terms of our targets. And with regard to partnerships, Honorable Mkoto, you made mention of JICA in particular. But I'm saying that we do have various partnerships, especially in curriculum that we have with the as a department. And what we are interested in the main is around the management of the MOUs that we have entered into with these partners, and then also to ensure that there is, of course, value for money in terms of these projects that we have. There is sustainability, and that there is also an element of accountability. As a result, we have established what we call a multi-stakeholder engagement forum, where we call all of them. We have a number of them, your NECT, you have your JICA, you have your VVOB, and we put them under one roof where they actually account to the department as to what is it that they're doing. But out of that, those engagements, then we look at areas of expansion. We look at areas where, as a department, we can learn best practices out of these partnerships. We also look at the tools that are being used. For instance, when it comes to curriculum coverage, we have adopted an instrument that is being used by one of the partners, which is your National Education Collaboration Trust, your NECT, because of the engagements that we have with them. Now, with regard to JICA in particular, yes, we are looking at the possibility of expansion to other provinces, but also maybe even to nationalize some of their programs. And for instance, we have decided to say that where training where we have very good trainings from this partnership, we can have a national training team that is being trained by these partners that we are working with, such that we can then be able to institutionalize some of their programs. So, I think I've tried to cover all the questions. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and let me start by extending my apology for having arrived late. It's because of the logistics. I will start with the questions that were asked by Honorable Boshoff. The first one was about the report on Ukufunda Virtual School. We will make arrangements to ensure that the report reaches the committee. And then secondly, the questions around the Funza Lushaka, the completion rate. According to the report on the evaluation of Funza Lushaka bursary program, 81% of the students who are funded through Funza Lushaka and enrolled for B.Ed. Complete within the stipulated four-year period. The dropout rate is only about 1%, which is very much low as compared to the dropout rate in other bursary schemes. Whether do the students, are they required to repay if they don't complete? Yes, indeed, when the student fails to complete or when the student fails to honor the stipulations of the bursary agreement, then the bursary is converted into a loan and collection mechanisms are then enforced as part of the NSFAS, which is responsible for this function. Honorable Guni, around the question of the IQMS and its effectiveness or ineffectiveness. Yes, indeed, we have said that IQMS is ineffective, and I think we've previously reported in the committee that the IQMS is ineffective in the sense that it is not able to achieve its intended objectives. And it is for these reasons that we have
developed the QMS so that we can strengthen those areas in the IQMS that are actually making it ineffective. But I think it's also important to indicate that I think our approach as a department has been to ensure that we explore all alternatives to make sure that unions are on board and they move with us regarding the implementation of the QMS. The situation as it is at the moment is that the QMS is a collective agreement, and as it is, it currently does not enjoy the majority in terms of the signatures. And we have always adopted an approach that says that declaration of policy in this regard will be a last resort. But as a department, we are at the point where we feel that we have exhausted all options in terms of engaging the unions and making sure that we accommodate them on all areas of concerns that they have. And it is for this reason that we are now at a point where we have requested the minister to actually declare a policy in this regard, and we are awaiting the minister's approval for a policy to be declared in this regard. The issue around salary negotiations, I think that's the question that the chairperson asked. The current agreement on salary negotiations is going to end on the 31st of March 2018. So we still have a year in terms of, but probably next year mechanisms will be put in place to start negotiations on a new agreement that will be expected to come into effect on the 1st of April 2018. Thank you. Thank you, DJ.
But before you close, on the Funza Lushana buses, since its inception, do we have any students where these monies have been collected from those who did not finish the program? Are there any cases where you say these ones were given these buses, they fell off and you have collected them?
I am sure, Chairperson, that we can make that information available. I don't have it at this moment, but yes, in terms of policy, we are obliged to collect funds from students who default in terms of the agreement. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Most of the questions have already been answered. The only one that is remaining is the one asked by Honorable Muguni on the available funds within Program 3. How the program is structured, there is money to run the program, but as we all know, there's never enough money for the projects that we want to have. But for the activities that are planned this year, yes, there's enough funds. It's only showing a bit of a high expenditure because of the Funza Lushaka bursary scheme, because that is a ring-fenced allocation to NSFAS. As I indicated, 90% is transferred at the beginning of the financial year, and the remainder, which is 10%, is transferred in January for registration for that particular academic year. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair, Honourable Members. Chair, in respect of salary negotiations, the information has been shared. The risk is that this is a year before national elections in 2019. And we've been discussing at technical level that we need to start the process early as 2017. Beginning of 2017, Cabinet has also expressed its concern around this matter, that the process must begin early to afford enough time to engage with stakeholders so that we don't push into polluting the environment for 2019 election, national elections. But I'm just saying, at the level of Cabinet, at technical level of FOSAT, we are also looking at that. We are going for a FOSAT workshop in December. and I'm sure it's going to be one of those items that we'll be looking for, and then we'll be preparing for starting the process early next year. Chair, I think the report, a dedicated session on the rationalization of unviable and small schools, I think it's worth considering by the committee sometime next year, so that we take a holistic, comprehensive view of the country. For instance, I do know that more than 50% of schools in the Eastern Cape shouldn't really exist as schools, because they've got learners that are below the norm of 135, and this is the information that we got from the MEC. So I think a dedicated discussion on this, the progress that we have made, the plan, and it impacts on the plan of other programs like infrastructure, development and rollout. And it impacts on the plan of even connectivity. I mean, for instance, why would you roll out infrastructure in a school that is going to be closed in a year or two or three's time? We have returned requests for schools to be built where we see that population growth is not sustained. And I must say that rural areas are getting extremely depopulated because of natural, you know, economic challenges and so on. People are moving to areas where there's some economic activity and where they can, you know, secure some livelihood. So these things impact on our planning, they impact on our delivery of very important projects. Honorable Mokoto, the cost for lost opportunities because of the delay, it's a very important question, but it's a very difficult exercise to engage in. And I know that maybe the cost of it might be phenomenal, but in terms of job creation, I think I agree with you, we'd have lost the opportunity to create those jobs, to afford those people some livelihood. That ACIDI must be implemented in the presidency, no. All infrastructure projects, including ICT, are coordinated by the PICC, but they are carried out in line function departments. But we report to the PICC in terms of the rollout of infrastructure and you know, ICT-related projects. Dr. Maboya explained the issue of the partnerships and the projects that we have. The scale and the coverage of the project like JICA depends on the money that's made available by the donor, and where the donor working together with us would prefer to extend the program. And that's how we are working. But to avoid monopoly of programs in terms of getting them located to certain provinces, we are trying to have some equitable spread. For instance, rich provinces get lesser attention, poor and rural provinces must get more attention, because they need those projects to bring them on par with, you know, affluent provinces in COVID. I think Mr. Mpanza answered, in a way, the issue of whether we have engaged unions in the development of the National Assessment Integrated Framework. I'm avoiding to get into the game of the semantics around the acronym, if you like, Honorable Mguni. But we can engage with it at some other time, I suppose, Chair, when we have the time. Yeah, unions have been involved. They unanimously support the systemic evaluation, and that record can be made available to you. They are happy that we'll not be administering the systemic evaluation every year. It will be done every 3 years to afford more time for remedial measures. What is still work under construction is diagnostic assessment and what is the other one? Summative assessment as part of Chapter 4 of CAPS. And Honorable Nguni, Dr. Maboya could have included, I'm sure she forgot when she explained, dealing with promotion and progression requirements for the senior phase in respect of maths. It's one aspect out of a basket of issues of curriculum development and assessment that her team and unions are dealing with. We are of the strong view that curriculum development is not an event. The minister warned that it should not be an episodic event that overhauls the entire curriculum, but it's an ongoing process. Curriculum is an ongoing process. Year to year, you can look at small aspects of the curriculum which you can change, develop, strengthen. That's what, you know, that's international best practice. Internal audit, Honorable Mokoto, I did, and I'm going through this almost agonizing. I did concede that one of our weaknesses is internal audit, and we are reconstituting and strengthening our internal audit function. And I'm sure in future when we meet with you, we'll be able to present that evidence to you. And we did concede, Chair. So it's no value for me to say whether internal audit did revisit the issues that have been raised. The fact that it's weak, even if it would have done that, very little value would derive out of that exercise. I'm just conceding on that point. Under expenditure, early warning systems and so on, I think the CFO and colleagues tried to explain the point. But historically, I mean, we've been within the norm of spending almost under 3%, under expenditure of under 3%, but in most instances over even 98% or so. And Dr. Maboya then also spent quite a lot of time around the issue of different types of monitoring. There are other agencies that are doing monitoring in the space that we are in. StatsSA is one of those. We use the data of StatsSA quite a lot because their monitoring is much more even rigorous than us. They do it every quarter. They do it for labor, quarterly survey, then they do household surveys year to year and so on. The strategic planning takes that, they analyze it, link it to what's coming through the system. Those are different forms of triangulating and verifying, but also doing some kind of monitoring. Honorable Boshoff, the 26 subjects, learners with special education needs for the National Senior Certificate, they are allowed to take up to a minimum of 5 subjects. So the fundamentals in schools of skills are going to be mathematics, 2 languages, one will be home, one will be first additional language, and the other 2 subjects. And there are several in the 26. So they'll be allowed to carry up to 5, a maximum of 5, because it's learners with special education needs. But in the dedicated presentation that Honorable Davis asked for, in the 3-stream model, we'll present the 26 subjects to you. In fact, we have previously presented, but we will do that again in that dedicated discussion. And the full report on the 3-stream model. So we'll give you the 26 subjects. Chair, I'm almost done. I also support the proposal by Honorable Davis on a dedicated discussion and comprehensive report on infrastructure. My proposal is that it must cover these 3 main areas, ACIDI in all its aspects, planning, delivery, resourcing, everything. EIG, which is Education Infrastructure Grant, but one area that we more often than not forget or neglect is infrastructure delivered through equitable share. Because the problem has been that with the introduction of these two grants, which are administered in the main from DBE, provinces have now shifted funds to other things like roads, like clinics and others, and infrastructure doesn't feature in their allocation anymore. So my request is that if we could cover those three, and maybe we could, with my humble request, even request provinces to form part of that discussion, because we'll be able to resolve many issues around this. I also support, Chair, that we must bring a comprehensive report to you on the Deloitte report on the post-provisioning model, very comprehensive, so that we are able to pinpoint to you which were the weaknesses in this province, in that province, probably what progress has been made to address all of those things. I'm sure it will help to cure the malady of the Peter Mokel model. I'm sure we have a long way, but it will assist. Dr. Maboya covered measures taken to prevent fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Sure, but just to remind honourable members, we have a report that we are expected to present to your committee, a full and comprehensive report on Karikude to your committee. That report is on its way, and I'm sure you will determine whether it's the 22nd or the 29th. That report will be presented then and will cover even more on these aspects. The MOU, Honorable Davis, the MOU with Cuba is about getting the curriculum specialists from Cuba, just like the Cuban doctors that you got through the Department of Health. May I also just indicate, Chair, you'll recall, some of you, that even a few years ago, 5 or even 10 years ago, we used to have Cuban, when I was in the Northwest Province, we used to have Cuban curriculum specialists who were dispatched from national and went to provinces to go and provide support around math and science. The focus would be around math and science. They train subject advisors, they train your senior and master teachers to train the rest of the teachers to improve performance in math and science. Agreement, the MOU with Korea, again, it's around the area of math and science and computer science with Korea. I'm sure they will be able to brush off the advancement of the motor industry. I'm sure we all know how much Korea has advanced in the motor industry and so on. So it's around math science and computer science. Volunteer teachers who are going to work with our team of specialists to provide support to teachers. Chairperson, the time frames, Honorable Khosa, in respect of the new framework for systemic evaluation, we are done. What is left is diagnostic and summative. And Dr. Maboya's team and the rest are working flat out to make sure that we finish this as early as possible, beginning of next year. But the fact that the main issue for us was what was going to replace ANA. And what's going to replace ANA is systemic evaluation. That is done. And Honorable Davis, it is also about addressing issues of comparability in terms of data, so that the instrument becomes confidential, like all other international instruments, so that it's comparable year to year, and it's not exposed to anyone like it's done internationally. So we're also involving the academics, the researchers who are part of helping us to develop that instrument. And I'm sure you'll be happy that Nick Spall, it's one of those. Okay. the underspending in Program 2 has also been explained. It's mainly because of workbooks. Workbooks have been delivered. We are busy getting the PODs. Once the PODs have been received, audited, then payment will begin. And also it's workbooks and Karikude. Karikude has just started and the expenditure is going to start picking up. Winter schools, Honorable Khosa, hey, you know, I always agonize when I have to explain this. But there are maybe two reasons why you need extra tuition. Maybe let me not call them winter schools. Let me call them extra tuition. Because in some schools you've got afternoon, others morning. International experience shows that this is working. You go to China, this is working. It's institutionalized. Maybe that's why Chinese are performing this good internationally. They almost beat every nation, by the way, when it comes to math and science. You go to countries like Zimbabwe, there is, you know, some form of extra tuition. But in South Africa in particular, the main reason why you need extra tuition in high school, I've said this before, Chair, our curriculum is too wide. The international benchmark has revealed that our curriculum is too wide and maybe not deep enough. And part of the work that Dr. Mabuya and the team and unions are doing as part of curriculum development is to attend to that, to make sure that over time we narrow the scope of our curriculum, but we go deep. We don't go deep enough because it's too wide. That's reason number one. Reason number two, maybe linked to this reason, for affluent middle-class communities, they've got tutors. People who can afford to employ tutors to provide extra tuition for their children. Who provides extra tuition for children of the workers, for the children who are unemployed? It can only be the state. We were criticized by Umalusi until I brought their attention to this fact. Many of us, even in this room, can acknowledge and appreciate the fact that our children have tutors. If they're left behind, if the teaching in the classroom is too fast for them because we don't have enough remedial measures such as remedial teachers and so on, people who can afford get tutors for their children. Now, those whose parents cannot afford, the state must come in. And that's where we have extra tuition. We've now even developed a framework to make sure that extra tuition does not necessarily do what is supposed to be done in the classroom. But it helps to support learners who suffer because of socioeconomic difficulties. They don't have a parent, or somebody at home who can provide the necessary support and so on. And my view, and this is my view, I know that the minister is strongly opposed to this extra tuition. For as long as the play field in South Africa is not leveled socioeconomically, you'll always need some kind of support of this nature. Until we reach a level play field. I do accept that making sure that people teach from the first day, the first minute up to the last one, it's a very important task that we need to attend to. Curriculum coverage is one of our mantras in the system. Mrs. Kiyobeka, Dr. Mabuya, and many of us think curriculum coverage all the time. Monitoring and following on teachers that they follow the curriculum. So I'm trying to respond, Honorable Khosa, to 2 points and 3 points that you had raised in this regard. But my view is that it's good if it's about revision and not necessarily covering what was supposed to have been covered in the class for slow learners, because it's in the nature of human beings that they grasp differently. Chair, I think I have attempted to cover those that were not covered by colleagues. If there's anything, we'll be happy, Chair, to go back to that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, DG and colleagues from the department. Honourable members, let me allow for very short follow-ups on if ever they are. I can recall Honourable Ngoni had a follow-up. I'm not sure whether there is any other one with a follow-up. You can come in, Honourable Ngoni.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm satisfied with the responses that you got here, especially on the rationalization. But I want to emphasize the issue of monitoring, Chairperson, like you said, especially in the Eastern Cape. You know, I think a week or two ago, we were at Matatia. You see, you could see a time bomb there. You could sense a time bomb. You know, for the first time, Chairperson, I have seen more men than women in a hall. Even they were cut even outside. Very furious. Very furious. You know, the issue of consultation, which has not been done. I don't know whether, but to them, they said consultation was not done. A district of office was moved without them knowing, or it has to be moved to somewhere else. There's a school that they are always putting this Moshwe High School. They are talking about those issues. And in the process of those and all those rationalization, there are agreements that are put in place or promises that we are going to put scholar transport in. And nothing has happened. It's quiet. And they are so far. Yes, I think we have explained more about this Peter Moore girl. And then you said, you know, even myself, when I went outside Shepherdson to ask one woman who was talking furiously, they, what is this Peter Moore? Can you explain to me? I don't know. Teachers know about this thing or not. These people do not know about this issue. But also even in Gauteng, I think I mentioned earlier on with the school, this what school that I spoke about. You know, it's a merger, it's rationalization, with another one which is called Chabavu. The department was so quiet. Up until now, this head is raising up. There are exams that have to take place, where the department is saying, no, that school is supposed to go to take kids to that school that we measured with to go and run. All this time, they were so quiet. They did not monitor. Teachers were paid, what's called admin clerks or their GAs were paid and so forth. But now that they have to write exams, they don't know how to provide for other resources. Then it becomes an issue to us. Well, as I'm closing, I'm satisfied with the maths, but I only see that you are only talking about the senior phase. There's also intermediate phase there, down the intermediate phase that is there. You know, when we go to constituencies, NASPEL, when they ask questions, you can't say, no, Mine, I will ask the department. You must seem to be on the spotlight. You know all the issues. They will ask this question. What is happening, more especially parents? See, what is happening with intermediate phase in terms of math, and when is that starting, so that when things are happening, we are able to advise a bit, you see, because sometimes a principal will tell you, no, I don't have any correspondence from the department about this thing. You understand how the something. So if we can, when this thing is going to start, that you condone, as you are putting it, the system is going to continue as it is, but it will be condonation, that's what you are saying. And are you including even intermediate phase in this in this issue, so that we know exactly when you speak, we don't contradict each other. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, DG, and your delegation. We have got a number of reports that you have promised, that you have agreed you'll finish us with. Yes, we'll find time next year of discussing them. The first one we've agreed on, the Wukufunda. Yes. The second one is the PPN report, the Deloitte. Another one is the ANA concept document, of which it will be our homework as honorable. It will be our novels during the festive season. We will just go through these documents and these reports in preparation for the upcoming year. And let us agree then on the time frame when we are going, when we'll get these reports, Mr. Brown, if they can reach the office of Mr. Brown by next week. These reports are ready. we are not going to sit down and come up with them. So that we asked for, that we never got. Okay, but it's fine. But for this meeting, those are the reports that we have agreed upon, of which we are saying by next week, before the end of next week, let us have those reports. Mr. Brown will circulate them to all the members, and we will interact with them. Otherwise, thank you very much. I think we are in a good... as honorable members, we are tracking you as the department. We want to see the progress so that come the end of the year, really next year, when we are interacting with our annual report, we know exactly where we have fallen behind, what is it that we could be expecting. That was a very comprehensive and a nice second quarter report. Thank you ever so much. Honorable members, practically we are left with 2 weeks. Three. Yeah. Among those meetings, honorable members, together with the department, we have got the report for jobs for cash, of which we have applied for it, because we cannot have a sitting next week Tuesday. If you see the changes on the parliamentary program, the 22nd plenary as from 9, but because it's one of the priorities that we have, we've applied for the 23rd.
Sorry, Chair, are we allowed to leave? Oops. I thought you were addressing honorable members, or do you still want us to stay?
You can listen to us.
Okay.
Unless you're
we enjoy listening to you.
Yeah. Then we'll be having that meeting on our members on the 23rd, where the department will be coming up with the rest of the investigation and what. But remember then, on our members, we no more have the committee week. In the afternoon, it will still be plenary, unfortunately. What I want to get into, remember we agreed that we will have the report, the final report, and we even agreed that we will have to meet with the stakeholders, where it was a strong feeling amongst the members, the honorable members, as to say, once we've interacted with the report itself, we need to have this discussion with the unions, with the SGBs. This is the report that touches them all. But now I want to draw us to the fact that practically enough, we've got two plus a little bit of one, because we are still here on the first week of December, where we have to adopt all these minis, look at the term, because we believe by then it's planned for Parliament for the first term, we'll be out again. We fit in all these contributions and proposals that we have, so that we finish our year knowing exactly what will be our first year term, and we even discuss the approach for the oversight for the school readiness next year. That was the purpose for that last week in December, the beginning of December. So this week, this year, we still have that jobs for cash. We have school readiness by the department for next year, preparing us for oversight. But the outstanding one, honorable members, is this one for the stakeholders, of which we can still do an application on another day, depending on the availability of the members. So remember, as you are saying, the upcoming weeks were supposed to be the committee week, where we have 2 days in the week, and we no more have them due to the challenge, due to the changes. But then, looking at the program, we can still apply if ever we feel that we need those stakeholders, maybe on the 29th, on the 30th, apply for another meeting where we can sit with those stakeholders and have that meeting. And we know that 2016 we have discussed this thing once and for all, and we move forward. So that was the proposal that I'm putting in front of you, honorable members.
Chair, I want to make a proposal that let's ask Mr. Brown to finalize the details, and using the same process that he always applies, you know, he will contact us, because it might prove difficult for us to open the diaries here.
Yeah, okay, just one thing.
Sure.
Okay. We agree that then who Mr. Brown, as soon as today or tomorrow, will be in contact with the honourable members for this one additional day that we need, as to say will the members be available.
I'm not doing anything on the 24th.
But maybe, unfortunately, these people that we want to meet will be doing something on the 24th, you know. Unfortunately, really, we are planning for the stakeholders, of which we are not playing our oversight, but we'll request them to come to that meeting. So let us be considerate of them. Let us not shift it to the 24th of December. But Mr. Brown, just check on that other week, then on the 30th, if ever, honourable members, just the morning part of it, if they cannot be available, so that we can quickly invite them before it is too late. Otherwise, thank you very much, honourable members. The meeting is adjourned.